Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
About me at turnerstake.com, or if you're a hedger producer, turnerstakeag.com. We work with broker-assisted clients, self-directed clients. Our probably most popular category here is hybrid. And yeah, for my clients, I write the Turnerstake Market Alert newsletter, which has all of our spec ideas. And then for the hedgers out there, farmers, ranchers, Turner's Take Ag Marketing. If you'd like to know more, if you'd like to contact me, all my contact information is in the show notes and also on that website, Turner's Take Ag and turnerstake.com. So, Happy New Year. This is the last day of the year, December 31st. We're going to be in full day of trading. We're going to go a little bit over what happened over the weekend and a little bit of our thoughts on the new year. First story really is the government shutdown. We're in week two. That is looking like it's not going to stop anytime soon. A lot of the politicians who could put an end to it are not going to be in session. So it looks like we're going to have another full week of the shutdown, at least. In the meantime, I guess anything that's essential in the government will be open. What is not essential is commitment of trader reports, nor a lot of the USDA reports, too. So I don't know if we're going to have a WASD in January. I don't think we're going to have export reports, unless it's a private report like NOPA, and apparently I think the inspections report may be a private report too. But other than that, we're not going to hear a whole lot from the USDA or any of the government services going out there. So let's take a quick look at the macro markets. If you look at the U.S. dollar, the U.S. dollar is starting to break down just a little bit on the charts, losing its momentum, and it could be coming down here. I don't think the shutdown helps. And if on the opposite side of that, if you take a look at the euro, that has been trending higher, consolidating and trending higher. So if we break through 95, if we break through 95 and a half on the dollar, you can say 95 support. If we don't hold 95 in the U.S. dollar in support, then we can go down to 94, 92. And it is looking pretty top-heavy here. So whether you're, you know, looking at the dollar, which would be to the downside, or taking, you know, keep an eye on the euro, which would look like a breakout to the, above the upside, be above 116. We're at about 115.27 right now. So that's what's going on in the macro and the currency landscape. It just looks like the U.S. dollar, the shutdown isn't helping anything. Going to be bearish for the dollar, probably positive for the foreign currencies that are priced against it. So the yen also has been breaking out to the upside here, and that actually has already broken out. The yen had some resistance at 90.5, broke out above that, and now we're at 91.50. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if the stock market gets worse, and as long as the shutdown goes, you would think the yen would gain some steam on there. Switching over to the stock market, we are rebounding a little bit this morning, and after we had the big sell-off at the early last week, where the S&P did go into bear territory, we have popped back up to 2,500. We'll see what happens there. On the chart, it does look like a bottoming action. Maybe that was all the selling coming into the end of the year. We'll just have to see. You know, right now at 2,500, we are above that 20% level, which no one really likes to see, especially the investors. I know some people think it's an arbitrary number, but the market is going to trade it if it thinks we're in a bear market. And let's see, the highs were about 2,950. Now we're at 2,500. You know, we're still down about 18 or 17% for the year, but or for the peak from the high to the lows, but at least it is not 20. I would think when the end of the year, when the first of the year picks back up, you would think some money would come into the stock market. And that may add some support, but we'll just have to see. What is interesting about next week is, today's New Year's Eve, tomorrow's New Year's Day, markets are closed. When you get into the second, third, and fourth, a lot of the traders and the money do come back into the market. It will be interesting to see if we start going higher. It'd be a good sign if we did. As far as the metals go, gold and silver have also been going higher, which is why I really thought the dollar would have come down more. If you take a look at a chart of silver, it's up 50 cents in the past couple of days, which is a pretty big move for silver. It has broken out of its range, and gold has been steadily charging higher too. Maybe not as fast as silver really has, but I think what happened was gold has been inching higher since November, and it's kind of accelerated as we've gone into the shutdown. While silver, because there's an industrial component to it, had lagged behind. Because silver, gold really is treated as just as a precious metal and a store of value. Silver is half of it, I would say, is, but the other half of silver is priced in terms of its industrial use. And if you're gonna have a slowing economy, or concerns about a slowing economy, that's going to put a little bit weight on to silver here. But it looks like in the past couple of days, if you look at that chart, that spike higher, I think the industrial concerns or supply and demand of that product has really been pushed aside. And with the volatility in the stock market and with the government shutdown, it looks like silver is being bought here. A lot of and same thing with copper. Or actually quite the opposite of copper, we've still been basing. So what's interesting about gold, silver, and copper is that copper is really an industrial metal, and it can give you an idea of what the market thinks about the economy. And if we take a look at copper, it's kind of basing towards its lows. It's the lows from August and September, about 261, and here we are about 267. If you look at gold, since November, it's been steadily going higher, and silver has been in between. So it really does give you an idea that the market is concerned about the economy, which is why copper is down so low. It is, the dollar's come down, and the store of value, and the concern about the shutdown, and that's given gold, why that's outperformed the most. And then silver's in the middle because it's half economic, half precious metal. So you go look at those three charts, you can kind of see it all playing out on the chart. Switching over to the energy markets, crude may have made a bottom with the stock market. It's going to be interesting to see. I think crude and the S&P are going to trade together. For the most part, it looks like the day that crude made its low, the stock market made its low, and the day we had that big rally in the stocks, the same day we had that big rally in crude oil. Here's what's going on with crude. As we head into 2019, there is concern about slower growth in the United States and slower growth around the world. Crude oil needs economic growth to get demand, and to catch a bid. U.S. production continues to climb, is at records. At a record high, and right now it doesn't look like the shale guys are going to stop producing, even at $46. That's going to be a bearish overhang. OPEC cuts do come into play in January, and I think that's what the market's pricing in now. This mid-40s range is probably the market saying we are going to have slow growth, we are going to have more production in the United States. OPEC plus Russia are going to limit some production, not a lot. And they're going to try to find an equilibrium. So crude may, in fact, may trade in the 40s for a while here as the market waits to see what happens with OPEC. Do they really come through with the cuts? Does that change anything to the supply, and the structure of the crude oil market? If you want to know if crude is in a bear market or bull market, or if there's too much crude out there, you can look at the flat price futures, but if you really want to get an idea of where we are in crude, take a look at the spreads. If you look at like June versus Dece is something that I've been trading, or if you look at Dece versus Dece, when you're a dollar under June versus Dece, to me that means you're bidding for storage. The fact that June is a dollar o under December, when we were about $1 to $3 over when crude is at 70, just gives you an idea that someone could produce crude, store it for 6 months and then sell it for a dollar higher, almost risk-free. as long as the storage didn't cost them more than $1 a barrel, which means that we're oversupplied, and, you know, especially in the short term. What's interesting is Dease 19 versus Dease 2000 is only $1 under, so there's a bigger spread between June versus Dease than, you know, Dease over Red Dease, which to me means the market's also thinking that this is going to be more short-term in nature. So they're kind of almost a first half of the year glut, which I wouldn't be surprised. It takes a long time for, or it does take time for markets to rebalance. And it takes time also for the United States to do their deal with China to get economic growth back. The stock market's really fallen here. So I wouldn't be surprised if we had slower growth in the first half, the oil market really trying to rebalance their supply and demand. And then, you know, for the second half of 2019, crude oil being on more of a recovery or stable ground. And that's why I think when you see June 19 versus Dease 19, we're $1.15 under. But if you look at Dease 19 versus Dease 2000, we're only a buck under. And I think that's what the market's telling us. So always interesting to take a look at the energy spreads to see where the market is supply and demand-wise, and I think that's going to help you out, whether you're trading options, futures, or the spreads itself. And also an interesting little outlook in what to expect over the year to come, or at least what the market's expecting for the year to come. Moving on to the grain market. Let's go to the softs real quick. I don't talk about the softs a whole lot, and one of the things that I am going to try to do for 2019 is really just touch on a lot of these markets, even if we don't totally focus on them. One thing that has been interesting that I've been getting a lot of calls on last week was coffee. For any of you who follow coffee, it looks like we're making a double bottom technically in that market. We're down at about a buck right now. The problem with coffee is it doesn't look like we're cutting back on supply. We are producing coffee below basically cost of production at this point. And what we now need is either like see less acres or see less production from Brazil and from, you know, from Vietnam and the other big traditional, you know, four or five countries that produce coffee. So if you take a look at a coffee chart, we're close again to making multi-year lows right around $1 or right around 99. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens there. But it is, if you do take a look at it, it's a big contract to trade. I kind of like the call spreads if we are going to trade it. Or if you do buy the futures, you can buy a put. If you have any, if you do want to participate in that, give me a call or shoot me an email. But that is one of the, what also is looking, that one would be probably bottom picking on. Something that has momentum down to the downside would be the sugar market, which also has a problem with demand not being as strong enough and supply being plentiful. We also just broke out below 1230, which is a new low since, let's say, October. And, you know, if we keep on going lower here, we could come down maybe to the lows we saw over the summer and early fall at 11 cents, which would be another cent lower. Be kind of an extreme move, but it's hard to get excited about sugar. As far as global trends go with sugar, you've seen populations eat less of it, especially in wealthier, more developed countries. And also, if energy prices are going to be this low, the whole sugar in the part of the ethanol component, which isn't a whole lot here, but it is like down in South America, there is sugar, part of sugar's demand is through the ethanol market. And anyone who's been following corn and energy here in the United States knows that those margins have really come down. So that's got a kind of a double whammy on the demand side for sugar right now. So we might be able to, might see that to continue to go lower. Cocoa looks like it's breaking out a little bit to the upside. I trade cocoa only technically now. It's very difficult to trade that market fundamental. 33% of the global cocoa market, I want to say, comes out of the Ivory Coast. So what ends up happening is, you know, if you try to follow that market fundamentally, you end up just kind of trading the political issues and unrest in the Ivory Coast. So probably better off just looking at that market from a technical perspective. All right, so we're going to then, and that's what we'll be doing in 2019. As for livestock and grains, it's going to be difficult to follow what's going on in corn and soybeans, and also at some point wheat without, government information that we have. You know, the president did tweet over the weekend that things are going very well with China, and they're actually making progress on intellectual property. Going forward, I was doing some of, if you are a subscriber here, and you go to turnerstakeag.com, I have updated my supply and demand tables for 2019. My main takeaway is you're probably going to be selling rallies in soybeans, because I was doing the estimates on if you have 5 million metric tons of Chinese demand or 10 million metric tons of Chinese demand come back for old crop, we're still at a 600 million bushel carryout to best, to like 750 at worst. Really doesn't argue for $10 beans. It barely argues for $9 beans. So any rallies you can get in the old crop into the $9 are probably going to be a sell. And for the new crop, anything into the mid to high nines and, God willing, $10 is going to be a sell in that scenario. I mean, doing the math on old crop, the best I could get was 600 million bushel carryout, which is still, I want to say, like a 14% stock to usage or something like that. And that's not bullish. That's low nines. That's soybeans in the low nines. To get to $10 beans, all right, and again, if you're a client here and have access to the website, you can go to Turner's Take Ag Marketing and look at this. I did a scenario of what it takes to get to $10 beans. And to get to $10 beans, you have to have a 10% stock to usage or lower, all right, in my opinion. So that means we have to get to around 400 million on the stocks, and not for the old crop, for the new crop now. This is the only realistic way to get there. And to do that, we need basically China to come back in and basically buy, 5 to 8 million metric tons on their own, plus another 2 million metric tons from the private companies that they talked about. Then we got to go from 89 million acre beans to 85 million acre beans and only have a trend line yield of 50. And at that point, you get basically 400 million on the carryout, and that's how you can have $10 beans. So I couldn't have a realistic scenario for it to happen in old crop. And then that is the realistic scenario for it to happen in new crop. Losing 4 million acres and 50 yield with China coming back and being a good client to the United States. And that's how you get there. So it can happen. But, if we have 88, 87 million acres and the yield is 52, all of a sudden, we're back to 600 or 700 million production, and we're also down to $9 again. And also, it's also assuming that this trade deal gets done and the U.S. is able to capture a lot of the soybean demand. What is interesting, though, I will say, I know there's been a lot of talk of the United States, now having increased cooperation between China, because the United States had the tariffs, and then China had their retaliatory tariffs, and China does more business with Brazil. There's all this concern about a lot of that demand staying down there. I will say this, a lot of nations had to come to the United States and buy soybeans from us. So even though there's going to be increased competition between, let's say, Brazil and South America and China, which was already happening anyways, I think something that the tariffs did do that no one's talking about is all those other traditional clients that used to go to Brazil basically came to the United States, and now all those relationships have been established. So I don't think that gets enough play, and that is, and I know they're not as big as clients as China, but it should serve to, do something down the road for the United States on that front. As for corn, I was doing the scenarios on corn. We're going to have about a 1.7 to 1.8 billion carryout for old crop. Corn at 360, is cheap. Corn at 370 is probably fairly priced. Corn at 380 is probably, fully valued or probably even be sold. So in my mind, corn's trading in between, let's say, 360 to 390, and most likely with most of its time in those 370s to low 380s, just based on the carryout and what's going around in the world. When you start to look at next year, 178 would be the trend line yield. And if we produce, and if we have like 91 million acres, ending stocks really don't change. Like we still stay around like 1.7 or 1.8. So the zero line, when we start talking about acres next year, is 91 million acres and a 178 yield, and just be pretty conservative with demand. we'll produce as much as we use, and right, and we're going to end the year about 1.7, 1.8, right? So that would suggest prices stay the same. If we start going up in acres, 92, 93 million, for every million acres we go, we're going to add on about, you know, what was the number here? It was something like, for every million acres you add on, you know, that's going to be harvested, you add another 180 million bushels. So, you know, we go to 92, we're at 2 billion. We go to 93 million, we're at 2.1.5, I think it was, on the carryout, which isn't great. Like, it's, you know, now we're really solidly in the threes, you know, for corn, in the mid threes. We're only trading mid to high, you know, threes in that scenario. So what's going to be interesting for next year's corn is we really are going to have a good potential to rally, but there's also going to be some pretty significant potential to come back into the mid to high threes also, which is going to make, you know, marketing that more important as we head into 2019, and also trading that. Because what's interesting about corn, it lives in this zone right now, you know, where it's above 10% stock to usage carryout, but it's below 15%. So it's not burdensome, but it's not tight. And what can happen is, if we get, let's say, 91 million acres, and then we have planting delays, or we have weather issues, and all of a sudden the market's like, well, maybe we're not at 1.7 or 1.8 carryout, we're actually at 1.5 or lower, then corn can easily rally into the $4, even in the front months, when we start talking 1.5 billion carryout, because we use 15 billion bushels of corn each year. That means that's 10% stock to usage. And you'll hear me talk a lot about, when you dip below 10% stock to usage, that's where prices can really go. And that's because that's when price rationing starts, typically. I mean, it's not like an exact science, someone's flipping a switch, or, you know, we go to the green light or something like that. But that's usually how the market tends to handle it. So, you know, all it takes is for us to go from a 178 yield on 91 million acres to a 176 yield to all of a sudden be at that 1.5, and that's when price rationing starts, and that's when corn is at 4. On the flip side, though, if we have more acres and we're talking about a 180 yield, all of a sudden we're, you know, well into the threes. So it's going to be important to understand the possible ranges based on the weather, and when we get these rallies in the spring and in the summer, you're really gonna have to sell into them, because if the weather rallies, you know, sputter out, the damage wasn't as much done as they thought there was gonna be, you know, when that weather premium comes out again, we'll have a situation where we're gonna be, you know, selling off at the end of the summer into the fall and into these delivery periods. I'm gonna put you on hold for 1 second. All right, I'm back, and that we'll get more into soybeans and corn here, but really, as we go on 2019, but what I really want to stress is the situation is looking a lot more, got a little more potential for rallies in corn here. So on the spec side, probably looking at ways to buy the dips. For farmers, we'll still see a lot of back and forth, so we'll still look at straddles, short straddles for old crop. But also for farmers too, we're going to get some rallies probably based on when we have weather rallies. And when we do get them, we need to take advantage of them. There's no doubt about it. So, and I think we need to have a realistic range of what price, you know, prices can be. You know, if we start getting into the low to mid fours, I think that's going to be a time to where you gotta take advantage of that. So, soybeans, on the other hand, get those rallies, going to really probably going to have to sell into them. The numbers just don't look great, especially for the old crop. And, you know, for the spec traders out there too, I think you need to take the cues there. When we really rally, you gotta take your shots. So we'll talk more about that. I just want to dip real quick into livestock. You know, it looks like cattle will be rallying here. The cash prices have been strong, and steadily rising, at least. We've seen probably losing some tonnage out there because of the weather. I would think we'd continue to see it act bullishly between now and through midwinter. And then with the hog market, we still like playing that spread. We've been doing that for a while. We've been doing the Feb April. We'll continue to do that and play the ranges. There was one bearish piece of news that I didn't love coming out of the market. There was some talk about the president wanted to shut down, you know, the borders with Mexico, which would, you know, which would be difficult on, you know, basically U.S. product going into Mexico, and that would affect the hog market. So if we do see a little dip on that, I would think that'd be more of an opportunity. I don't think we're going to start shutting down things with borders, but that would be a definitely a news story to keep an eye on. So thanks for everyone who listens to Turner's Cake Podcast. If you like this podcast, please go to iTunes and give it a review. Please send along to anyone who you may think might like it. If any questions for me or want to contact me, all my contact information is on the show notes. Have a happy new year, and I'll talk to you in 2019.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.